And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
It turns the brains into guacamole.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, want to announce the results of this week's poll. I asked a simple yes-no question. Will you be looking for a new job in 2012? The results are these. 23% of the people taking the poll said yes, they will be looking. 77% of the people said no, they'll be staying put in the year 2012. I've changed the poll up on the site. So go to brainstormingonline.com, and this week I ask a different question in honor of Martin Luther King's birthday. The question is this: who had a greater impact on U.S. history? Was it Martin Luther King or Cesar Chavez? You can cast your vote up on my website, brainstormingonline.com, and I'll announce the results next Thursday. That website again is brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests has an interesting topic, no two of which are related. My next guest is a hotelier to the stars who developed the role of chief emotions officer at his company. We'll discuss the simple truths for creating happiness and success from his latest book titled Emotional Equations. And if you have a question or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Chip Conley started his own hospitality company, Joie de Vivre, and as CEO for 24 years, grew it to the second largest boutique hotel company in the United States. At the age of 26, Chip transformed a seedy 1950s no-tell motel into the world-renowned Phoenix Hotel, a legendary rock and roll destination catering to the stars such as David Bowie, Linda Ronstadt, Nirvana, and many others. Joie de Vivre expanded into a collection of over 35 award-winning hotels, restaurants, and spas with more than 3,000 employees. As a preeminent thought leader at the intersection of psychology and business and a successful practitioner of emotional intelligence at work, Chip started has his own unique prescription for success and has written several books. His latest, as I said, is Emotional Equations. After 24 years as chief executive officer of the company that he founded, Chip is now the chief emotions officer, and we'll ask him about that. He received his BA and his MBA from Stanford University and was awarded an honorary doctorate in psychology from Saybrook Graduate School and Research Center. Joining us from Northern California. Hi, Chip. How are you today?
Great. Thank you. Great to be with you.
Great to have you, and I love to have thought leaders such as yourselves. You have such an interesting story, so that's where we're going to start. Tell the story about how you were feeling down one day, you wandered into a bookstore, and you reconnected with Abraham Maslow's writing.
Yeah, you know, this is 10 years ago. This was during the last downturn, which here in the Bay Area was like a depression. It was the dot-com bust. And my company, which had started, you know, 25 years ago at this point, but 15 years ago then, we'd become the largest hotelier in Northern California. And so the dot-com bust, which is a very geographically centric kind of downturn, which, you know, in the Silicon Valley and San Francisco, we were really vulnerable. And I could see that we were in a lot of trouble since all of our hotels were in the Bay Area. And I went to the bookstore looking for a business book, and within about 5 minutes, I was in the self-help section of the bookstore, and that's where I reacquainted myself with Abe Maslow and his books. He was not there at the bookstore. He died in 1970, but I did see some of his books, and I sat down and started reading them, bought some of them, and then over the next few weeks, really started thinking about the idea that if in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you aspire to the top of the pyramid where self-actualization occurs and you're living up to all of your potential, what if you were to apply those themes to a company? And so I said, why don't we become a self-actualized company? And some of my senior executives thought I was crazy, but I said, let's look at taking Maslow's hierarchy of needs and applying it to our company. And we did, and we created a sort of a self-actualized employee model, a customer model, and an investor model. And we tripled in size in a 4 or 5 year period during a very difficult time. And then I wrote a book, Peak, and Peak was the book that sort of spoke to how other companies, from Apple to Southwest Airlines to Zappos, have used Maslow's hierarchy of needs to make them successful as well.
Well, it's a great story. Out of real desperation comes some beautiful thinking. Now, your latest book, which is titled Emotional Equations, Simple Truths for Creating Happiness Plus Success, you really connect emotions and mathematics, two things that one wouldn't normally put together necessarily.
Yeah.
Talk to us about how you came up with the idea of connecting those two thoughts, and particularly how the mathematical formulas do make it easier for some people like myself to really get in touch with their emotions.
Well, here's the thing. It's been very bizarre. We've had two once-in-a-lifetime downturns in the last decade. We had the dot-com bust that I was just talking about, and then we've had this great recession, which was not a geographic downturn. It was a global downturn.
Certainly was.
And in 2008, I could just sort of see it coming, and I was like, "Oh my God, we just got out of the dot-com bust, and now we got to deal with this." And I was feeling sort of depressed, honestly. I was not feeling, I felt, during the dot-com bust, I felt like a gladiator using Maslow. Now I felt like a prisoner. And I started reading a book called Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. A famous book on, you know, meaning. He was the guy who ended up in a concentration camp and believed, as a psychologist, that the fuel for life is finding a sense of meaning. And so I turned that into an equation, not because I'm a math major, but just because I was trying to think of a way to make it relevant to me on a daily basis. And the equation was despair equals suffering minus meaning. And the way that the math in this works is suffering, if you're a Buddhist, suffering is the first noble truth of Buddhism. Is, you know, it's everywhere. It's ever-present. But if you're in a concentration camp or if you're in a bad recession or a bad marriage or a bad job, you're always going to find the suffering. So if suffering is the constant in life, it's just there. I mean, it's not to say we only suffer, but it's always available there to look at it. But meaning is a variable, and you increase the meaning, then when you increase the meaning, the despair goes down.
And
the despair goes down, you're less sad, you're less depressed, you're in a better place. And that's what I needed. So I was using it for myself, and then I started using it in my company.
Well, and I think it's a very clever idea that you came up with, Chip. So talk to us, how did you know which of the elements of these formulas, these equations, which you've developed, were the constants and which were the variables that we can control? That's what I liked about the formulas, that we can control the variables.
Thank you. Well, it was actually, I'm not an expert on this stuff, so I had to go out there and talk with the experts. I ended up spending the last 2 years with some of the luminaries in psychology, Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi, who created the idea of flow, being in the flow. He wrote a famous, famous book about it. And Barry Schwartz, who's a leader in disappointment and regret. And Marty Seligman and Sonia Lubomirsky, who are famous for happiness. So I went out and spent time with a lot of these luminaries. And then I spent a bunch of time with some Google engineers. Dr. Dan Russell, who's the head of search for all of Google. He's got a PhD, and he's the one who helped me with the math part. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just making up these stupid little equations, but that I had some basic premise of what I thought the equation for anxiety might be, but I needed to go out and then talk to people about that, or happiness, or joy. And as I did that, I was able to craft these equations. And what I found, the book came out earlier this week and hit number one on Amazon of all books in the world, which is amazing to me. It's like, oh my God, that's quick. But I think what's happening is that we're living in a time where there's a lot of external chaos in the world, and we're looking for internal logic because we can't really control the external chaos, but we can control our reaction to it. There's a really great quote from Viktor Frankl that I have in the book in Emotional Equations. And he says, between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom. So in essence, what he's saying is, things are going to happen to us. We can't control that sometimes. But what we can control is our reaction to what happens to us. And in that reaction, we can actually create whatever kind of growth or freedom we want in our lives. And I think that's absolutely valuable advice at this particular time in the history of our economy.
Without a doubt, it's very poignant. My guest is Chip Connelly. He is the author of the book Emotional Equations, Simple Truths for Creating Happiness Plus Success. One of the things that you distinguish in your book, Chip, is the distinction between emotional intelligence, which has gotten a lot of play in the business world recently, and emotional fluency. What's the difference between them, and how is that relevant to organizational leadership today particularly?
Well, it's the difference between learning the French language and all of its dialects and its history, and learning how to actually speak it on the streets with a shopkeeper. So someone can be intelligent but not fluent. Someone can be an amazing critic of films, but they can't make films themselves. They could be a great dance critic, but they can't go on stage. So to be emotionally intelligent means to academically understand what it means to be intelligent. But to be fluent in your emotions mean you actually have an intuitive ability to read what's happening in you, make sense of it, and be able to respond to the world accordingly. And that's what I'm, what I've tried to do. And Dan Goldman, who sort of helped popularize the idea of emotional intelligence, helped me with the book in certain ways. And so it's really about actually learning how to be more practical about the idea of emotional intelligence.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Now, in your book, Chip, you describe the emotional equations as giving people an ability to really improve their psychohygiene. That's what we're talking about right now. Give us an example of an equation and a tool that people can easily use so they can more readily understand this.
Well, the number one, you know, the one that I think is most relevant to a lot of organizations is the anxiety one, because fear is in some ways the most contagious emotion in most organizations. And emotions aren't contagious. And if you don't think emotions are contagious, go smile to the person next to you and see if they smile back. We do. We sort of have these mirror neurons in our brain that sort of help us to actually somehow, you know, mimic each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two components to anxiety. It's what we don't know and what we can't control. So the equation for anxiety is anxiety equals uncertainty times powerlessness. And the reason it's the times is because when you add the two together, it's combustible. So anxiety equals uncertainty times powerlessness.
All right. Now let's dive into that, Chip, if we can, because in your other equations, there's always been a constant. So in your formula, anxiety equals uncertainty times powerlessness. What's the constant in that one?
So there's some equations that don't have a constant, and there's some that do. And in algebra, not all algebraic equations have a constant and a variable. But in this particular one, you have two variables. And when you have two variables, that's why the effect can be combustible. But let me tell you how to work with this.
Sure.
We create something called the anxiety balance sheet, which is in the book. And think of something that makes you anxious. It could be that you're worried that you may lose your job. So create four columns. Column one is what is it that you do know about this issue that's making you anxious. Column two is what is it that you don't know. So column one is what is it that you do know.
Mm-hmm.
Column two is what is it that you don't know. That deals with that the first part of the equation, the
Got
uncertainty,
it.
Uncertainty. Column three is what is it that you can influence, and column four is what is it that you can't influence. So column three and four relate to the powerlessness piece.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start listing those down, you know, give yourself 15, 20 minutes to write as much as you can under as many columns as you can. And what you'll be surprised by, potentially, is about 75 to 80% of the people actually have more items listed under columns 1 and 3, what I'll call the good columns, what you do know and what you can influence, than they have under 2 and 4. So sometimes when we're actually anxious, we're tending to focus only on columns 2 and 4. Secondly, you have the ability to actually look at column two and say, what is it that I don't know? And ask yourself, how could I go out and find that information? There may be somebody I could ask the question to. You know, is my husband or my wife having an affair? Now, you may not want to know the answer. Or is my boss going to fire me? You may not want to know the answer, but there's a really famous study that was done years ago where people were given the choice of either having an electric shock now that was extremely painful, or having an electric shock sometime in the next 24 hours that was half as painful. And guess, so what do you think people chose?
Well, I would say that they chose postponing it until the less painful shock.
No, interestingly enough. See, you're different than most people then. Most people chose to have the really painful shock now because the idea of randomly having a shock sometime in the next 24 hours, even though it's only half as painful, the anxiety associated with the next 24 hours knowing that was coming was more painful. So what that suggests is that most people would prefer to have bad news, even if it's terrible, and deal with it, than to have the pain and suffering of anxiety, the mental pain that comes with that. And so it's a good lesson for leaders in terms of saying, gosh, if you've got to deliver some bad news, doesn't mean you'd like blurt it out before people are prepared for it, but don't hold it back while everybody's anxiously awaiting for it. Like, you know, deal with it. Communicate.
Very practical advice. My guest is Chip Conley, author of the book Emotional Equations. Chip, I want to talk about one that is a big problem for me, and that is regret. Now, regret's formula is regret equals disappointment plus responsibility. Take me through that. Why is it that I feel regret so often, or how can I use your formula to better cope with it?
You know, regret's an really interesting emotion because it's not an emotion that's felt very often in what are called, you know, developing countries, third world countries. And it's fascinating. And why is that? Why is there less regret? Or why is there less regret, frankly, in Russia during the Soviet age? Because regret is a result of having a modern society with choice. So when you have a modern society with choice, you have more responsibility for making your choices, as opposed to having someone else make the choices for you. In fact, yeah, like a six-year-old probably doesn't have a lot of regret, because maybe six-year-olds aren't making a lot of choices for themselves. But as we're adults and we're in a modern society and we have lots of choices, we are going to have disappointments. But when the disappointment feels like it has a lot to do with choices we made and the responsibility of our part in it, then it becomes regret. Now, there's two things you can do with regret. And again, this is one of the key parts of the book, Emotional Equations. It's not about learning about the emotion and then just sort of saying, okay, now I understand it, now I can feel more regret. No, it's actually, what do you do with it? Emotions, I think, are meant to serve you as opposed to curse you. So instead of feeling cursed by regret, now I understand that the reason I feel regret is because I have all this responsibility for a bad choice. The question is actually, how do you make it into something that's a lesson? So regret can energize you to actually say, wow, I learned my lesson. I'm going to use that for the future. So in each of the chapters in the book, at the end of each chapter, there are four very specific tools people can use. And so, for example, in the regret chapter, there are four different tools that people can use to actually understand what to do with that emotion. And not all the emotions in the book are bad. There's joy. There's
happiness.
Positivity, there's authenticity, there's happiness. So there's all kinds of emotions in the book.
My guest is Chip Conley. We're talking about his book, Emotional Equations. Chip, what do you want readers to take away from reading your new number one Amazon best-selling book, Emotional Equations?
I think the number one thing I want people to take away from it is to know that our emotions don't have to get the best of us. People say that, my emotions got the best of me, as if there's some evil twin that took over you. I think that our emotions can represent the best in us. A lot of times it means that you have to just be a little bit more responsive to your emotions and not reactive. When we react to our emotions, sometimes that's when we say our emotions got the best of us, is that in the moment we reacted to something, and if we had knew what was behind that emotion a little bit more, we would have maybe not been so reactive. So, I mean, the fact is our emotions are, we take them with us our whole lives. We never get rid of them. And so to be a little bit more emotionally fluent in understanding them is what the purpose of the book is.
And it is a good purpose. Chip, you've probably intrigued a lot of my listeners. They want to learn more about you, learn more about the book. Where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
EmotionalEquations.com. If you go to EmotionalEquations.com, there's all the information about the books there. There's also a Facebook page for Emotional Equations. You can go there, too, as well as a Chip Conley author page, because Conley spelled C-O-N-L-E-Y. So a couple Facebook pages and then the EmotionalEquations.com page.
Chip, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay. Very good.
Take care.
Thanks.